Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. Welcome to another week of me on my bullshit. In terms of news this week, the big one that I'm sure everyone has heard about, it was reported this goes beyond TV news because the man was a legend and it's been all over everything earlier in the week, was that Norman Lear, who is one of the most successful television writers, creators, and producers of all time, passed away this week at 101 years old. And not only was he 101, he was still actively working at 101 when he passed away. And if you think that you don't know who Norman Lear is, you're wrong. You do. So he dominated television in the 70s and the 80s, sitcoms, comedy television. He was All in the Family and then all of its spinoffs, Maude, The Jeffersons. Was that it? Then something spun off of The Jeffersons. What was it? I forget. But then he also did Sanford and Son and Good Times, Mary Hartman. What else? One Day at a Time, both the original and the reboot from 2017. Different Strokes. He was very, very prolific, very celebrated, and he changed the face of TV, you know, and he was a wonderful person, both, I mean, obviously as a very talented creator of TV, but also as a progressive political activist. He was very active in progressive liberal causes and, you know, the type of satirical political comedy that we enjoy now and have enjoyed for years, like you can draw a direct line from All in the Family and Maude to like Veep. Do you know what I mean? That style of sarcastic, again, satirical, like making a character so over the top in leaning in one political direction so as to make it ridiculous and funny that we see constantly. That's thanks to Norman Lear and going all the way back to Archie Bunker and beyond. You know, B. Arthur as Maude, as the militant feminist. We can draw a direct line there to anything in the past 30 years, you know? And not just comedy, but like Buffy, you know what I mean? So he was an all-around amazing figure and in American culture, not just pop culture, not just TV, not just, in politics, but he was a very well-rounded, very well-respected person. And like, I can't even imagine living to 101, let alone working at 101. When he died earlier this week, he was in production on a reboot a planned reboot of Mary Hartman, which was one of his shows from, I want to say, the late 70s and early 80s, maybe just the 80s, I forget. You know, and he had just had One Day at a Time just recently ended, and he was working on a revival of Who's the Boss. I don't think he did the original of that. I should have checked this before he might have produced it, but I don't think he created it. Did he produce it? I don't think so. I can't remember. But he was working on the reboot, regardless. And also, like I said, of Mary Hartman. And he had a lot of projects in development over the past, you know, like 10 or 15 years. None that got picked up to series except for One Day at a Time, which started on TV Guide, I want to say, and then moved to Netflix. That's the one with Rita Moreno and Justina Machado. But rest in peace, Norman Lear. Like, what an amazing career. It's one of those, he had one of those lives, and he had lived to such an old age, and again, because he was still so active, that it's like hard to be sad when someone of that stature passes away, because he accomplished so much and did so much more than you could ever expect one person to do. Passed away at 101. God bless. In gay headlines, because, you know, like that was obviously a big deal, but the bigger deal for the homosexuals and the middle-aged women and the teenage girls was that RuPaul's Drag Race announced the cast of season 16 this week and the premiere date, which is going to be Friday, January 5th. And I'm so excited for season 16 because, I've mentioned before, I live in New Hope, Pennsylvania at the moment. We are one of the gayest cities in America. We're like one of the gayest towns. We are like routinely ranked just behind Provincetown and Fire Island as the third gayest town in America. And one of our queens, she not started here, but you know, what, she is from Philadelphia, but was very active in the New Hope drag scene for a little while. She won Miss New Hope Celebrates, which is our annual pride event in 2019. And she is going to be on season 16 of Drag Race. Her name is Safira Cristal. And I'm so excited for her. First of all, like, she is now considers herself a Philly queen. She hosts gigs in Atlantic City and Asbury Park, New Jersey at the moment. But she's also just had a show this past week at Frankie Bradley's in Philly. I know she's done a whole bunch of stuff in Philadelphia. She's also worked in New York. She's done Boston. But most important to me personally is, again, that she did a whole bunch of gigs in New Hope. And I've seen her. She is an opera singer. She's very talented. She is gorgeous. By all accounts, from what I can tell and from what I have heard, very kind and very nice and very sweet and very maternal. I'm so excited to see her on TV. Her entrance look was, promo look is amazing. Go look them up because there are some really great looks this season so far. And I'm just really excited, and I hope she goes far, because we've waited 16 years for a Philly queen to be on the show. Philadelphia has an amazing drag scene. It's a little more underground, maybe. You know, it's not like in New York where you can, you know, there's 100 gay bars, go to any of them any night of the week, and you're going to see a great queen, and maybe even one that's already been on Drag Race. It's not like that, but there is a great scene here. Some of it's very alternative, I guess would be the word. Like I mentioned last week that the first Philly queen to be on a major drag series was Onyx on Dix from Dragula. Unfortunately, she is already off the show, but whatever. But we have such a cool scene here. But you know, Safira and Onyx on Dix, obviously, but then we have like Little Peace is just so weird and funny. A personal favorite of mine, I don't even know if she does drag anymore because I haven't been to a drag show since before the pandemic, but Mary DeKnight, who was a Lady Gaga impersonator, she was wonderful. Bev, who else? There's a whole bunch. Again, I haven't been to a show before since before the pandemic. Miss Thing, love her. I'm so excited that we're finally going to be seeing some Philly representation on the show. So that's number one, is that we've waited so long for a Philly queen to represent the drag scene. And I hope that Safira does well. Like, I mean, obviously, I hoped Onyx did well, too. And I think she was in two episodes, which sucks. But yeah. Mimi I'm First was on season 3 of Drag Race, and they called her a Philly queen, and I think she lived in the area for a while and maybe started in Philadelphia, but when she was cast on the show, she was in New York. So, yeah. I don't know if, and also with all the shit that went down with her, which if you haven't seen it, just Google Mimi I'm First, Reddit maybe. Mimi I'm First is not a drag queen anymore. She sells real estate out of drag in South Jersey and does community theater. But yeah, so I guess we don't really claim Mimi. So we're all saying this is the first Philly queen. And I'm really hopeful for her. She looks amazing. The cast looks really fun. I'm loving already Dawn and Tsunami. Who else? A Mandatory Meeting is the greatest name. I love that name. Didn't really love her entrance look or her Meet the Queens. I found her kind of try hard and annoying, so I don't see her going too far. Plain Jane looked really fun, very Katya, very Willem. It looks like a fun Megami looks really good. Megami, I forget how you say her name. There's another queen from Miami after Malaysia Baby Doll Fox from last season. So I'm really excited to see what happens with this season. I feel like it's been forever. It hasn't, but it feels that way since Sasha won season 15. Season 15 was so good. So I have high hopes for 16, especially with this Meet the Queens. And I have a queen I'm rooting for, and I really hope that I get to root for her all season. So go check out the Meet the Queens reveal if you would like of Drag Race season 16. And it premieres on MTV on January 5th at 8 o'clock. Cannot wait. All right. Recaps this week. We're starting to wind down for Christmas. But I watched the finale of Dancing with the Stars. I can't remember if I talked about the beginning of the season on the podcast. I feel like I did mention something. Because the first elimination was fuckery. But I've been like randomly, when I have the time and the mental capacity and the memory, tuning in to Dancing with the Stars, because I love Ariana from Vanderpump Rules. And I really, she was doing well at the beginning when I watched that first episode. And I was hoping that she, you know, continued to do well. And she did. She made it all the way to the finale. And I also loved Allison Hannigan, obviously, Buffy Stan for life. And I loved Barry Williams from The Brady Bunch, one of my favorite shows as a kid, and he just was so energetic and fun and sweet. So I'd been like kind of in and out, but I watched the last hour of the finale because it was, what, 3 hours long? It needed to be how long? 10 minutes. And I guess, I don't know why they made this season so short or whatever, but They had five couples still left for the finale, and I don't think that's normal, but here we are. So it was a very long episode because everyone danced, I think two numbers. I didn't see everyone's first one. I saw everyone's second one, the freestyle. And then they, like, you know, there were a billion commercials. Like, the actual episode was probably an hour long, but it was in a 3 hour time slot. And they, like, just started in the last 5 minutes. They're like, okay, fifth place, fourth place, third place, come on down. And the winner is blah. Like, it went so quick. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? I don't know if that's how they normally do it, but this is why I can't watch the show, is that I'm bored for 2 hours. And then in the last 5 minutes, in the overrun time, is when everything happens. It's bizarre. So the final five couples were Allison Hannigan and Sasha, Charity from The Bachelorette and Artem, Ariana and Pasha, Jason Mraz and Daniela, and then Sochi from Captain America Multiverse of Madness, and Val. And, like, let's just be honest with ourselves. None of this show is based on the celebrities anymore. It's based on their professional dance partners. That's what people are voting for, because the dancers are the ones who choreograph, the dancers are the ones who make them look good, and half the time, like, people just vote for the dancer they like and not the celebrity that they're with. Like, there's, like, Sochi was really great, and she definitely deserved her place in the finale, but for me, she would have been third place, not first place. Oh, right, Sochi won. Sorry, I forgot to say that. Sochi won. And, like, she was, don't get me wrong, she was wonderful. And she always was really good. But she looked a lot better because Val is one of, if not the best male dancer on this show. And he's really good at choreography. He's really good at playing to his partner's strengths. Like, I mean, how many times has he won this show? This can't be his first one. I'm going to look that up while he's won 3 times. So, yeah, there you go. Like, anyway, so, like, who they're partnered with really determines how they're going to be received. And that's just, it is what it is. So anyway, Sochi won. For me, she would have been third place. I love Ariana. I thought she did amazing. I thought she had a really great season. I would have had her as runner-up, and I would have given the win to Jason Mraz, who I expected to come on the show and be the most awkward, gangly, gay nerd of all time, because he just released a song, I want to say over the summer, which he performed on this finale randomly, called I Feel Like Dancing. I had to sing the song in my head to get to what the chorus was. It's called I Feel Like Dancing, and he did a music video for it that I watched when it came out over the summer, because it was kind of like it was promoted by him and by a bunch of YouTubers that he had guests in it. And one of them is the fitness marshal who I follow and do his workouts, and have been for like two and a half years. Anyway, he was in it, so that's why I watched it. And they kind of like promoted it as a rebranding of Jason Mraz. Like, he's no longer this like folk singer of I'm Yours and The Remedy. And, what's that song? Lucky. Yeah? Lucky I'm in love with my best friend. I think it's Lucky with Colby Collette. Anyway, whatever. No one cares. So it's like an upbeat kind of like poppy song, and he was dancing in it, and he was fucking terrible. Like, he looked like a horse trying to learn how to dance. Like, his limbs were all over the place, and he's so long and uncoordinated, and it just looked real bad. And it was exacerbated by the fact that they did this music video as one long take, so they didn't get to like pick the best the best cut. So he looked terrible in this video. I was like, oh God, when they announced him on the cast, I was like, oh geez, this is going to be bad. Like, he's going to be an early out. And he wasn't. And again, the power of a good partner, Daniela worked so well with him and really whipped his ass into shape. And he was, by the end of the season, I thought, by far the most improved of the people in the finale. Because as good as Sochi and Ariana and even Charity, Allison was the most improved, but she started so poorly that no matter where she ended up, it was going to be most improved. Anyway, of the good ones, he was the most improved. Because like Ariana and Charity and Sochi, like, they started at a higher level, I think. They all started much better than he did. And by like week 2-3, I thought he looked like a professional. Jason looked like a professional dancer. I would have given him the win. That's my opinion. But you know, Sochi deserved the win. She was great. Ariana would have deserved the win if she would have won. Charity, even, I think, would have deserved the win. Like, she clearly wasn't an audience favorite. Maybe we're starting to get sick of the Bachelorette always going to the finale whenever they have one on. I know I am. But, yeah, Allison was a very obvious, conciliatory fifth place. We all knew it. She knew it. Like, she kept getting votes toward the end because, again, she was very much improved and she had such a great attitude, and like the overcoming of trauma was her story. In episode one, she's like, you know, as a kid, I was told that I was terrible or too tall or something to dance with all the kids. So I hated dance class and I quit and I never wanted to go back and do it again. So she was like overcoming that childhood trauma by being on the show. And then not only that, she ended up like surprising herself by, like, I think she went thinking she was going to be on for a week or two and then started to enjoy it. And that came across in her dances and in her interviews and stuff. And then people started to see that and kind of fall in love with how much she was enjoying herself and how much she was improving the more she started to believe in herself. And then I think she surprised herself by getting to as far as she did, to a point where she kind of was like, wait, I actually want to do this. Let's fucking go. And she ended up making it to the finale, deservedly so. And now, you know, like, she had such an amazing attitude the whole time. And then as a Buffy stan who follows a lot of the bullshit that happens behind the scenes and like the gossip and shit, there is like a very famous feud. We're not famous, infamous, and maybe not even all that well known now I'm thinking about it, that Allison Hannigan and Sarah Michelle Gellar did not get along on that show. And a lot of why reboots have been unsuccessful and like neither of them will really comment on the other and neither of them really like talking about Buffy publicly is because in my view, from what I have read and seen, is that neither of them want to talk poorly of each other, but also neither of them want to acknowledge the issue. Does that make sense? Like, neither of them wants to make the other look bad by talking about it, so they just don't talk about it. Like, I don't know if it's because they got old and realized they're both to blame for whatever the issue was, or they've realized maybe, I think at this point what I'm getting at is they've now realized it was outside forces exerting pressure on them to behave in a certain way around each other because of who and where they were at the time the show was on. That's super vague. But basically my understanding, or like my conspiracy theory allegedly, is that Joss Whedon and the network and a bunch of other like creative types were pitting Allison Hannigan and Sarah Michelle Gellar against each other on Buffy. This has nothing to do with Dancing with the Stars, but welcome to my conspiracy theory TED talk. That they were exerting different pressures on them to each be quote unquote the star of the show. Because Sarah Michelle Gellar was obviously the star, she was fucking Buffy, right? But then at the same time that they were doing Buffy, and Willow was one of the most popular characters on the show, and they were really exploring her character and giving her interesting new things to do, whereas Buffy was kind of just like, you know, the stalwart. She didn't, no offense to anyone around that show, but she didn't change all that much. You know, like, she was the hero. The hero exists to change the lives of everyone around them, right? Not necessarily themselves. So whereas, like, Willow was going on this huge journey throughout the show and, like, exploring her sexuality and becoming a witch and becoming this powerful villain by the end of season six, Buffy was kind of just like, okay, I'm saving the world over and over. What else do you got? So there was, like, that they are both under pressure to, like, be the star. And then at the same time, while the show was happening, they both had, like, huge movie careers that were exploding outside the show. You know, in the same year, the same summer, Sarah Michelle Gellar had Cruel Intentions and Allison Hannigan had fucking American Pie. You know what I mean? So, like, Allison Hannigan's star starts to rise and Willow's character starts to change. So I think that, like, there was a bit of a diva thing that came with that, not necessarily from Allison, but from the way that she was being treated by other people. And that's my theory. That's my conspiracy theory, is that they both were quote-unquote stars and they were competing for the limelight, basically. And it was exacerbated by, I love that word today, exacerbated. It was exacerbated by the people around them, the creatives, the network, Joss Whedon, I'm sure, because we've now learned from a bunch of interviews that he loved to pit people against each other on the sets of his shows and movies. So I wonder, like, a lot of this might have been him pitting these two against each other and then literally doing it at the end of season six, right? Anyway, this is all a huge long way to say that in Allison Hannigan's finale package, Sarah Michelle Gellar gave her a congratulations video. And if you are a Buffy stan, if you read Evan Ross Katz's book In Every Generation that came out last year, you know that there is a feud, or that there was a feud. So to see that kind of seemingly resolve itself because of Dancing with the Stars, if Dancing with the Stars can resolve that, like, can we send them to the Middle East? Like, can we have a Dancing with the Stars tour in Israel right now? Because we need peace restored. That was a very flippant way of talking about what's happening on. I don't mean any of that, but I'm just joking. Don't fucking yell at me. But you know what I mean? That, like, kind of like how RuPaul says Drag Race brings families together, Dancing with the Stars ends rivalries. Like, let's fucking go. But Allison was there as a consolation prize. She knew she was never going to win. She finished in fifth. So I think any of the top three, Sochi, Jason, and Ariana, could have won. Sochi did. I would have given it to Jason. I did not love Ariana's freestyle dance. I thought it was good. I thought it was fun. But I also thought it was a little weird. Like, it didn't always look great. To no fault of her. No fault of hers. It was, like, I think a lot of it was the costume. Like, she was, it looked like rain boots, but they weren't rain boots. It was weird. But I also didn't really like Sochi's freestyle either. I thought it was way too busy. So I think Jason, based on what I saw and why I would have given him the win, is that I thought his freestyle finale was the best. And that coupled with the growth, and I would have given it to him. Also the fact that, like, who the fuck is Sochi? You know what I mean? Regardless. I'm just glad that Ariana made it to the finale. And then, like, the next day it was announced that she's going to be on Broadway in Chicago playing Roxy Hart based on her dancing on the show. We've never heard her sing, so that should be interesting. Not that you need to be a good singer or a singer at all to play Roxy. Just look at all the stunt casting they've done for that role. And maybe I'll actually get to see that fucking show now. Like, I wanted to see it last year when Jinx was in it as Mama Morton, and the damn thing was sold out half the time I tried to, not half the time, it was sold out every time I tried to go see it. I would look for tickets, and there would be, like, a couple premium seats. And, like, love you, Jinx, but I'm not paying $200-something to see fucking Chicago 15 years after it opened. 15? 25? I don't even know how long that damn thing's been running. It's been running fucking ever. 25, I think it's 25. Jesus. Anyway, I'm not paying that kind of money to see Chicago. Like, I'm going to look for the bootlegs, which I found. She sounded amazing. So I'm kind of hoping that maybe I can see Ariana in it, because that should be fun. And, like, Bravo celebrities represent on Broadway. I hope she does great. So that was Dancing with the Stars. And just to, like, backtrack a little bit throughout the season, like, Barry Williams, again, amazing. Loved him. Great energy. He should have had Allison's place in the finale, is my personal opinion. Yeah. What else happened this week? Hollywood Houselift. This is the other show I wanted to talk about. So Hollywood Houselift second season premiered on Freevee, which is on Amazon. So I definitely have talked about this before, but if you are uninitiated, Amazon Freevee is a FAST, a free ad-supported television channel that you can get either standalone, like you can download the app like on, you know, any device on a Roku, Fire Stick, whatever, and get just Freevee, or everything on Freevee you can also find on the Prime Video platform if you have Amazon Prime and or Prime Video. And it's basically, it's what Jury Duty was on over the summer, which is nominated for an Emmy or a bunch of Emmys. What else did they have? It's what Judge Judy is on, Bosch Legacy. And what sucks about it is that you can't skip commercials on it, even if you pay for Prime. Like, even if you are a Prime member, you still, there's no option to go commercial free. So that sucks. But the commercials, at least for Hollywood Houselift, are not all that intrusive. They can be long, but there are fewer of them. But Hollywood Houselift is Jeff Lewis from Flipping Out on Bravo, one of the OG Bravo shows, like that kind of hit during Bravo's heyday when it was like Project Runway and Top Chef and the Rachel Zoe Project, Flipping Out, Workout, Real Housewives. At that point, I think it was just OC, New York, Atlanta, and Jersey. What else was on at that point? Blowout. Queer Eye had just ended, I want to say. But anyway, it was in like that kind of that initial Bravo golden age. And Flipping Out was Jeff Lewis, who is a contractor, interior designer. He had a whole bunch of other shows on Bravo too, like Interior Therapy and Property Envy. And he's friends with Andy Cohen, so he has like a show on Andy's SiriusXM network. And Flipping Out followed Jeff, who is OCD and gay and has his own business and works with his best friend. It was like this weird, like, motley crew of people working with and for him. And he would, like, go to job sites, and there was always shit going wrong. And because he was, like, detail-oriented and had a touch of the OCD, like I said, and was very demanding and, like, angry a lot. I don't know how much of that was a performance and how much was the actual personality, that it, like, made for a lot of tense situations. And he, like, yelled at contractors a lot, which was always fun. But then he also yelled at his staff a lot, which was not as much fun. And, like, every season he would go through a new assistant because they would cry and quit, or he would fire them because they were not up to standard. And that ran on Bravo for, I think, 11 years. And I loved Flipping Out. It is to this day one of my all-time favorite TV shows, let alone reality shows. I love Jeff. I find him so entertaining. And I really missed that show since it went off the air. But then last year, he signed a new deal with Amazon Freevee to do the show Hollywood Houselift, which is a bit of a pivot from Flipping Out. It's kind of like, it started life as a revival of Flipping Out. It started life as like Flipping Out season 12 on Amazon Freevee, but then they kind of changed the focus and wanted to differentiate it, and they called it Hollywood Houselift because now the focus is on Jeff redoing celebrities' homes. And I don't know if it's the moving away from the like the format of Flipping Out, that it's more about the houses and the couple, the celebrity families and couples now that got celebrities on board. If Amazon has a bigger budget, I'm sure they do, or what. But they're getting like some actual freaking celebrities on the show. This season, it's the first two episodes came out on December 6th. They air Wednesdays, or they drop on Wednesdays. The first two episodes, we meet Gina Rodriguez, who he's doing, he's redoing her backyard, and she is from Jane the Virgin, obviously. She won a Golden Globe for Jane the Virgin, and she has a show that is on ABC right now. The second season starts in a couple months, called Not Dead Yet. And she was also in that movie Deepwater Horizon with Mark Wahlberg. She's been in a whole bunch of other stuff. Like, she was in, that movie with Miss Bala, where she was like a Miss Universe contestant. And he's redoing her and her husband's backyard. Anthony Anderson from Blackish and Law and Order and et cetera. He was in season one and had Jeff, like, I think, plant a bunch of trees, like landscape his house. And now he's doing a bunch more with his backyard and his actual home. So he's back. Josh Duhamel, the movie star from Transformers, et cetera. He is, Jeff is redoing his, was supposed to be redoing his living room, which, wild. He built a playground for his son in his living room. So weird. And Jeff like wanted to redo it because Josh just got remarried. And now, after the show filmed, his wife is pregnant. But like, the wife just moved in, which is also weird. They got married. They've been dating for years and she just moved in. And she wanted to redo the living room because like the kid is 9 years old and there's a literal like tree fort, sans tree, just like a fort in the middle of the living room, and like a pool table and a basketball hoop, just a freestanding basketball hoop attached to the wall in the living room. She's like, yeah, it would be great if we could like get rid of, you know, this. But then Josh like later called Jeff and was like, I can't do this to my kid. We have to redo the bedroom instead. So they're redoing the primary bedroom, which did need it. The bathroom was falling apart, literally, like the vanity was detached from the wall, and I can't imagine living there. Like, you'd probably be sleeping and in the middle of the night, I'd be scared that I'm just going to hear my bathroom crashing in on itself. So he's redoing the bathroom instead. Such a weird dynamic. And I think that's it. I think that's it for this season. But then like last season, Ashley Simpson was on it. Anthony Anderson. Well, I can't remember who anybody, but regardless, there are like actual stars on this show, right? So the format for Flipping Out has changed a little bit. If you were a Flipping Out watcher, you will like Hollywood Houselift. It's, you know, we still follow Jeff and his workers, but he hasn't had a turnover in a while. Like, that was always kind of the thing on Flipping Out, like I mentioned, that he would go through assistants and contractors and stuff like toilet paper, that there was constant turnover because he would basically like abuse them, which I shouldn't laugh about, but it was fun to watch. But now he's had the same assistant, Shane, for years, and Shane also is on his radio show. And what's his name? Tracy? The designer, the architect, whatever you want to call him, he's been there for a while. Megan is still working with him. She used to be on Flipping Out as well. So he's kind of kept his staffing the same, which is an interesting angle. But like, because of that, they also have this great rapport with each other. And the thing I find most enjoyable about this is it's a memory of a time when you could be nasty and mean on reality TV and understand that it was okay because you have that rapport with the people around you. Let me tell you what I mean. So currently in all of the Housewives franchises and similar types of shows, there is a certain amount of eggshell walking that people do on these shows because they're sensitive. And Drag Race is another great example. that people walk on eggshells on these shows because they don't want to say things that could be deemed offensive or cancelable. So they tend to like not accuse each other of things or really fight dirty the way that I think the most entertaining years of some of these shows did. So I'm thinking like Brandy Glanville from Beverly Hills has now been on 2 seasons of Ultimate Girls Trip, and rumors are circulating that they may not air her 2nd season in Morocco because of things that she said or did that were perceived differently than they were intended. That maybe would have been okay for her to do 10 years ago on Beverly Hills, that now in this current more sensitive, and I'm not saying that in a bad way, a more sensitive, more empathetic climate is not permissible to do. I'm going to leave it at that because there it's all he said, she said, or she said, she said in this case at that point. But that was supposed to be 4, and they've now made it, they've, you know, pushed it, and they're airing this week, actually, on Wednesday. The new season of Ultimate Girls Trip is The Real Housewives of New York Legacy, where they go back to Scary Island. That was supposed to be 5, it's now 4, and 4, which is in Marrakesh, has been pushed back seemingly indefinitely, but no solid word on that. So, like, the Brandys of the past, the Avivas of the past, the Ramonas, the, like, these people that are abrasive and rude and maybe at one point were fun to watch, maybe not so much anymore, but it's because of the intent, right? So, like, Jeff is very rude and condescending, and like he jabs at people constantly, but it's all from a place of like understanding and joking. And because he surrounded himself with these people that he has that history and that understanding with, they make fun of each other and snipe at each other constantly, and it does not come across as mean-spirited. So let me give you an example from Hollywood Houselift. In the 2nd episode, we're introduced to Sarah Foster, who was on the 90210 reboot on the CW and is David Foster, a.k.a. Mr. Catherine McPhee, a.k.a. the former Mr. Yolanda Hadid from Beverly Hills Housewives, his daughter. Jeff is redoing her bedroom because she needs help getting rid of things. So she's like jokingly saying, oh, come up upstairs and see it, but just don't call me a hoarder, like preparing Jeff that she has a bunch of stuff. But she doesn't seem serious about it. And then we see the space and she has like clothes popping out of every cabinet, every like hanging off of every surface. And just like there are clothing racks full of shit and it just has taken over her whole upstairs. And Jeff is like, no, you're a hoarder. But means it. And like this girl clearly had never actually considered the fact that she might be a hoarder. She just kind of jokingly referred to herself as a hoarder, and Jeff was like, no, you're a hoarder. You need to fix this or I can't work with you. And that could be perceived as rude. And I think she took it a little personally. But then also he was like, no, like, you don't understand. I'm not being mean to you. Like, I literally cannot help you with this space until you get rid of some of the stuff. There's literally nothing I can do. I would just be rearranging your shit. You need to get rid of things in order for whatever I do here to actually be of any help to you. And she puts in the work. And by the end of the episode, he's agreed to help her. And that'll be moving forward in episodes 3 and potentially beyond. Or here's another one. So Andrew used to be one of Jeff's assistants that, you know, had a breakdown on the show and got fired. But now he's his own contractor who works with Jeff off and on, which is very fun to see. And we find out in episode 2 that he has been going through cancer treatments, I think for prostate cancer. And he's now cleared, whatever. And it's a very like heartfelt, sweet conversation that Jeff and Andrew are having, and Shane, Jeff's assistant, is there. And you can tell that Jeff, like, because Jeff and Andrew have a very mocking relationship. They make fun of each other. They, like I said, they snipe at each other. Because they have that history. Like, Jeff used to be his boss, and now Andrew's his own boss. So when it like there's always a sympathy, a caring, a love underneath Jeff's anger and rudeness, I think. And that really comes across, like, they're talking about Andrew's fucking chemo treatments. And Jeff is like, you know, I really understand. I had to have a prostate exam. And, you know, he's talking about, like, how much lube the doctor used and that there was no warning. He just, like, stuck the finger up there, whatever. And Andrew's just listening to him tell this story, like, looking at him. And then Shane goes, I'm really sorry that that happened to you, Jeff. I'm really sorry you had to go through that. Like, bringing back to the earth the fact that, like, we're talking about a man's cancer treatments and you're like, my doctor gave me a prostate exam because I'm 50. Do you know what I mean? Like, that they can just mock each other and be, like, quote unquote, mean to each other. And there's no, like, issue with it. That they can joke back and forth. Like, he makes fun of Megan, who works with him, that she's on Mounjaro, he says. So he makes fun of, like, her eating habits. Like, not her eating habits, but, like, he makes fun of how she's on Mounjaro. And he makes fun of Shane for being, you know, really gay. And he makes fun of Andrew for the clothes that he wears. And all of, like, that's just, like, that's their rapport. And I love that because that's my sense of humor. Like, that is who I am. And I know that that doesn't work for everyone, but it's also why I think I have a lot of the friends that I have. Because even though I'm rude sometimes, or a lot of the time, and I like to make, like, I don't know, bitchy jokes, I am joking. And underneath it, there is a respect and a love for people who have earned it. You know what I mean? Like, Jeff and I are very similar in that way. Also very similar, I learned, is that Jeff, it's now understood that a lot of his crankiness and grumpiness and angriness comes from just being hungry all the time. And I can relate to that as well. I get hangry too. Like, there are multiple conversations on the show and on Flipping Out, if you remember, about, like, what to have for lunch. And there was one thing where, like, should we stop at El Pollo Loco on the way? Yes, because you can't meet her because you're going to be in a bad mood if you don't have food in your stomach, and she's going to make you in a bad mood already. So you have to have something in your stomach before we go. Otherwise, you're just going to be rude. You're not going to be just cranky. You're going to be hangry, and we can't have that. That's fun to me. And then, you know, on top of it, you get to see celebrities' houses, and Jeff is an impeccable designer, and so you get to see his designs. It's like the very, very, very best version of any HGTV show mixed with a touch of, like, a reality docudrama, like a Flipping Out or a Workout or a Kardashians or what have you. And it's also a workplace reality drama, like a Below Deck. It works on so many levels, and I love it. It's episodes. That was me combining episodes and Wednesdays. Episodes drop on Wednesdays on Amazon Freevee. And I want people to watch this because I really enjoy it. And especially if you are a Bravo person, it is very much in the wheelhouse of what Bravo does and used to do. It's like, it's a very good combination of, like, the vitriolic years of Bravo mixed with what Bravo currently is, only it's on Amazon. And yeah, the commercials suck, but whatever. This we're moving toward is where we're, instead of having cable, we're just gonna have the cable model, but with a million streaming services. Okay, let's wrap up with my final countdown to Christmas recommendation of the season. Because this coming weekend, which is the, what will it be? The 14, 15, 16, 17. Is the final full weekend of Countdown to Christmas because of how Christmas falls, that Christmas Eve is on a Sunday. Their last original Hallmark Channel movie is on Sunday the 17th rather than Sunday the 24th for obvious reasons. There is one movie on the Thursday before Christmas weekend, so I'm just going to wrap that one in with everything else. So for those of you who have been keeping track, I recommended Round and Round this week. It hasn't aired yet as of this recording, but I did just watch Christmas on Cherry Lane, and I really loved it. It's This Is Us, but Hallmark Christmas movie, and it needed to be longer, and I'll never say that about Hallmark movies, hardly ever, but this one needed to be longer. It needed to be more fleshed out. Like, it's basically the same premise of This Is Us, where it's, different timelines with the same people or the same like relationships. And it was kind of, it was really fun to see how everything tied together. And it was really emotional and diverse, but not in a way that felt forced. I really enjoyed it. So if you can catch a rerun of that, please do. So coming up this week on Thursday, December 14th, on Hallmark Movies and Mysteries is Heaven Down Here. Inspired by Mickey Guyton's song of the same name, Heaven Down Here tells the story of four disparate people who find themselves stranded in a local diner on Christmas Eve when a snowstorm hits the town. This sounds fun. It's another, I think it's a Mahogany movie. I'm not sure. They're not marketing that way. But Mickey Guyton is a very talented country singer. I love her. I recommend her music. If maybe not this movie, I don't know. But that sounds fun. It reminds me of the Golden Girls Christmas episode where they end up in the diner in Miami and it freakishly starts snowing and they offer to run the diner while the cook goes home to see his family. For some reason, that reminds me of that. That's on Thursday. On Friday is The Secret Gift of Christmas. Bonnie is a personal shopper who helps her new widowed client, Patrick, reconnect with his young daughter. Though Bonnie and Patrick's ideas of shopping couldn't be more different, she is determined to get Patrick and his daughter everything on their wish list. This does not seem interesting to me. There have been a million Hallmark Channel Christmas movies about personal shoppers. There was one literally, I think, last season, Jolly Good Christmas. This also sounds like The Perfect Christmas Gift. And what's the other one? Is it On the 12th Day of Christmas, maybe? There have been a bunch where there's like the personal shopper who finds the perfect gift, and I'm over it. I don't need it. It's Megan Ori and Christopher Russell. Saturday is Sealed with a List. This holiday season, festive Carly sets out to conquer her list of abandoned resolutions from last year. Aided by coworker Wyatt, she finds love and confidence to chase her dreams. Okay, so a New Year's movie. That's fun. I don't recognize this cast. Katie Findlay and Evan Roderick. Evan Roderick sounds familiar. He was in something on Hallmark I just watched. I don't know what, but I've seen him in something. New Year's Eve. That's cute. Okay, that's the Saturday movie. Sunday. Friends and Family Christmas. Daniela has recently moved to New York to pursue an art career and decides to stay in town to share the holidays with her circle of artist friends instead of going home to see her sweet, if overbearing, parents. Amelia is a talented entertainment lawyer trying to stay focused on her work after a broken engagement. I'm assuming that they meet and fall in love. This is my recommendation for the week because it's lesbians. It's lesbians. Let's go. So Hallmark has yet to do a same-sex romance Christmas movie with two women on the main channel. And here it is. It's Allie Liebert, who was in Every Time a Bell Rings last year, which she played queer in that also. She's also been in A Gift to Remember and its sequel. And she also directs these movies. She directed Christmas on Notting Hill this year and another one that from last weekend. Which one was it? I forget. But she directs a whole bunch of these now too. And she's starring in it. And she is also queer in real life. So that's very fun. So this is my recommendation. It doesn't sound all that interesting. Like, it sounds very standard, including the title Friends and Family Christmas. But I'm really interested to see where this goes. So that is our recommendation for the week. But then the final movie of the season that airs the following Thursday, December 21st, on Hallmark Movies and Mysteries is Miracle in Bethlehem, PA. Successful and fiercely independent, Mary Ann Brubeck adopts a baby girl to raise on her own just before Christmas. And that is Benjamin Ayers and Lauren Vandervoot, both of whom are longtime Hallmark Christmas movie people. But that sounds... I don't like it. We are very near to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, but I don't think it was filmed here, so I don't care. It also sounds weirdly. I don't like the spiritual Hallmark movies, the religiously overtoned ones. I don't like it. I know that Christmas is time of the year is like it's based in a religious celebration, but all the things that we love and that Hallmark celebrates about Christmas actually have nothing to do with Christianity. They're all pagan rituals. You know what I mean? Like the birth of Christ has nothing to do with decorating your house with 15 Christmas trees as we've seen them do, but, or, you know, ice skating or hot cocoa or candy canes or town festivals or singing, you know, none of that stuff. Like other than the fact that they always sing hymns because those are public domain. But anyway, those are the final movies of the year. Again, my recommendation is Friends and Family Christmas on Sunday night. I am so excited for Christmas, for the end of the season. A lot of shit going on in my personal life. So next week is going to be the winter, fall, whatever you want to think of it. Like I've always run this show kind of like a broadcast television series where I start in September, go on hiatus in December, come back in January. I'm going to do that again. So next week I'm going to have a recap of my favorite TV shows of the year, which will be shorter than usual because there was not a whole lot of TV that I watched, one, and that I enjoyed too. Like I watched a lot of stuff that I would never say was, quote, the best TV of the year. It just entertained me for what it was. But there is some stuff, and I've talked about it a lot of it already on the podcast, but I'll throw in some new stuff and some stuff that I think you should watch in that week between Christmas and New Year's when we lose track of time. We never know what day it is, what time it is. We eat whenever we feel like it. We follow our stomachs, and then we just lay on the couch or in bed and just, like, you know, zone out, read, watch TV, stare off into the abyss, contemplate the state of the world, our lives, etc. That's a great time to binge watch TV. So I'll give you some recommendations to do for that. And then I'm going to go on a little bit of a break and be back probably with a recap of the season premiere of RuPaul's Drag Race, which is January 5th. And I am hoping to have something for my 100th episode, which will be the episode after that. This is 98. The episode back will be 99, and then the next one will be 100. Again, I'm hoping to have something a little bit more exciting at that time. But also, again, that's going to be a real busy time of the year for me because everything I have going on in my life outside of this, which stay tuned for updates on that. So thank you all for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic. I'll be back next week with the final episode of 2023 with more recaps, reviews, analyses, discussion, and recommendations. Have a great week, everyone.